Chapter 6. Boys. At evening bell, the merchants close their shops, and the Crasians retreat to their coloured wagons. Everyone needs their rest, for tomorrow is solstice, the longest and busiest day of the year. In every city and town across Theza and Crasia, there will be celebrations, but here, in Pump Forge, it is even more special. Tourists gather around the central fountain of the market square, pitching tents and laying out blankets. Groups won't leave for the hike until dawn, but camping in the market square to be ready for an early start has become part of the tradition. Selen is quick to stake a fine spot for her small tent, but she returns soon after. Flamework lights up the night sky as festival crackers bang and flash on the cobbles between the tents. Jongleurs juggle and play their instruments. Everyone else is watching the entertainment, but all I can see are the other children as they gather, dance and laugh. Young couples hold hands, snuggled close, and I wonder how it feels to hold someone, or to be held. They seem such simple things, but I ache for them.
"Reckon that's the last of it," Wanda says,
as the sky falls dark and the flamework crew begins to pack their implements.
"Not as good as the ones your mum used to make, but a good show."
One more thing Mother was perfect at.
"Time to head inside," Wanda says. "Busy day tomorrow. Going to be dancing and games at the Solstice Festival, and Callan Smith's promised a lesson on how to make armour."
I nod, wanting to scream at the words. While my friends meet the warded children and see the wildlands beyond the wards, I get to braid flowers in my hair and toss poorly balanced rings at bottles for a chance to win trinkets. I used to love solstice festivals. I would spend months planning my outfit and count the days until the celebration. Now it feels like a punishment for something I cannot control. Selen looks excited to go and join the crowd. And why not? I'm the one who's holding her back. She deserves this, and so much more. "Go," I say. "Add my share of fun to your own." Selen wraps her arms around me, pulling me close to whisper in my ear.
"We'll have it together. I'll be waiting in the woods behind the stable."
My chest tightens, but I nod against her shoulder, too subtly for the others to notice. "It's not fair you get to go." I make the words loud enough for Mika and Wanda to hear.
"I'll tell you about it in a few days," Selen promises, before dancing off into the crowd.
The finest inn at Pump Forge is not luxurious, but it is spacious, with high ceilings and well-made furniture. We have the entire top floor, including a central dining area. Wanda no doubt thinks it a mercy to keep me from talk of the hike in the common. It's surprisingly easy to slip the vial from my hidden pocket, counting drops into the pot of strong tea on the tray. Too little, and a big woman like Captain Wanda won't do more than yawn. Too much, and she and Mika won't wake for days. The whole vial, and they might not wake at all. I pick up the food on my plate, but I have no interest in it. My stomach is turning somersaults.
"Ain't gonna eat?"
Wanda lifts a thick cut of venison on her fork.
"Game's fresh out here. Ain't like the grain-fed meat at home."
"That makes it better," I ask.
"Oh, eh?"
Wanda stuffs the forkful into her mouth, lips smacking with juice as she chews. Disgusted, I push my plate away. I've more in common with stock raised in captivity.
"Oh, Olive, it ain't like that."
Wanda reaches for me. There is genuine hurt in her eyes, but I don't care. I quickly get to my feet, stepping out of reach. "What's it like then?"
"Your mum just wants you safe."
I cross my arms, and the parents of the hundreds of children in the market square don't.
"Course they do," Wanda spreads her hands. "It was up to me. I'd take you. Honest word. But it ain't."
I stare at Wanda a long time. She means the words, but it makes her no less my jailer. But then her jaw tightens as she swallows a yawn. I never touched the cup of tea I was served, but she and Mika emptied the pot. I'll be in my cell. I stomp off to my room, making a show of slamming the door. Inside, I pace, listening to Wanda and Mika talking in low voices. I hear the clatter of plates as the table is cleared and turn down my lamp, letting my eyes adjust to the darkness. I've never needed much light to see. Starlight from the window and the lights of other houses are enough. My ears strain until at last I hear it. Wanda's snoring. I slip quietly from the room to find Wanda passed out on the small couch in the common room. The door to Mika's room is closed, with no light coming from beneath. Holding my breath, I pad across the room. With every floorboard creak, I expect Wanda's eyes to snap open, but she doesn't even shift in her sleep as I put an ear to Mika's door. I close my eyes, focusing on Wanda's snoring, and then deliberately tuning it out. There, like a trickle drowned by the roar of a waterfall, my sensitive ears can make out the steady sound of Mika's breath. I return to my room, shutting and locking the door. The window sticks, and for a moment I fear they've nailed it shut. Slowly, I increase the pressure, muscles cording. Suddenly it comes loose, opening with a thump. I freeze, ears straining, but Wanda's snoring continues unabated. I take a deep breath, then throw one leg out the window. A moment later, I am perched on the sloping roof of the inn, gently sliding the window shut. I shiver in excitement as I slide down the roof, catching the awning lip as I go over the edge. My dress billows as I swing to the ground. My door is locked from the inside, and they will be in no rush to wake me. Even without the potion, they might not realize I'm gone until mid-morning. If the tea does its work, I'll have a head start of hours, and they won't be looking for a boy. There will be the quarter pay when this is done. Mika and Wanda may never trust me again, and Mother will be a thunderstorm. But for just a few days, I'll have a taste of what it's like to be free. How does it feel? Selen asks as I tighten the last strap of the wooden breastplate. Wooden tassets protect my hips, with VAM braces and greaves for my forearms and calves, all of them carved with wards and glazed in hard lacquer. Beneath, I wear a dark coat and sturdy leggings to cushion the plates. I've taken off the beado, wearing the cotton underclothes Selen says boys favour. I don't ask how she knows. It feels odd to be unstrapped after years of binding myself tight. Awkward, I admit, and lighter than expected. This armor's supposed to protect me? Might not think it's so light after a few days' hike, Selen says. Wooden armor ain't much good against a horse spear or a crankbow, but the wards will turn Corling's claws better than steel. So they say. I run my fingers doubtfully over the symbols carved into the wood. When was the last time it was put to the test? Selen shrugs. Ain't much chance of it being tested on this trip either. She hangs her lantern from a tree branch and holds up a hand mirror as I part my thick black hair in a boy's style, braiding it at the nape of my neck and tucking it inside the breastplate to hide its length. I take my powder kit, darkening my brow and brushing a hint of shadow around my hairless jaw. Then I put on the open-faced wooden helmet and strike a dashing pose. How do I look? Oh my. Selen fans herself with the mirror. You're going to be beating the girls off you with your spear. I open my mouth to snipe in return, but stumble over the retort as Selen steps back and holds up the mirror again. A stranger looks back at me. He has the same shaped face as me, the same sky blue eyes, but the subtle effect of the hair and makeup is striking, with the armour adding weight and bulk to my frame. I doubt even Mother would recognise me if I walked past her. And I look good. Handsome and powerful. The kind of boy no one would question on the Borough tour. Like I'm about to debut a new dress, I can't wait to see how people react. Because it feels right. My turn! Selin hands me the mirror and puts on her own helmet. She laughs as she mimics my pose, but the illusion is real. Her broad shoulders carry the breastplate as if it were made for her, and her heavy jaw looks right in the helm. If you weren't my aunt, I smile, I'd hide in a dung stall for a chance to kiss you. Selin swats at me, but I dance away from the blow. Look a bit like the general, if I'm giving honest word. Selin smiles. Mum says he was the handsomest man in Hollow before he lost his hair and added 50 pounds of ale to his belly. Nice to know I have that to look forward to. I laugh, but Selin continues. You ain't one to tell tales. You look more like some desert prince than your mum. She winks, just as well, with the Duchess's face on every coin in Hollow. Mention of the Duchess awakens a familiar knot of worry in my stomach. Let's go before it's too late. We set a quick pace to the market square, where hundreds of teens have gathered their bedrolls into packs. The sky is turning violet with the coming dawn as youngsters from all over the duchy wait to be assigned guides for the highlight of the Borough tour. 2 dozen warded children stand by the fountain at the centre of the square, holding up hands and shouting for folk to form up into groups of 20. Like insects and light, folk are drawn to the children, but they keep their distance for fear of being burned. The warded children are the last remnants of a magic that is passing from the world. Ale stories and tampweed tales of their exploits are spun by every jongleur in Theza. Mother says their powers have diminished since the war, but their very presence remains intimidating. Everyone was said to breathe a sigh of relief when they left Hollow to live in the borderlands. Civilized folk didn't know what to do with them. The children embody every freedom I long for, but I do not envy them. I want to join society, not eschew it. Some few wear plain, threadbare robes, but most are clad only in sandals and scraps of ragged cloth that leave little to the imagination. Ward tattoos run up and down their limbs and across their bodies. Their hair is cropped close, often shaved or spiked, with mind wards tattooed on their heads. Here and there, I see bits of armour, greaves and braces, a small buckler, but nothing close to full protection. Their warded skin is exposed wherever possible. My nostrils flare, catching the stink of sweat and hogroot, a herb known to repel demons. A handful carry weapons, spears, bows or knives, but most are unarmed. Few of the children are even as large as me. It's hard to imagine any of them putting up a fight against an armoured soldier, much less a demon. But they move with feral confidence, and folk jump when they bark. I don't think that one has anything under his loincloth, a familiar voice says, and there are peals of laughter. I turn to see Minden next to me in the crowd. She catches my eye and smiles, and for a moment I think we've been caught. Then I note the blush in her pale cheeks and realise she hasn't recognised me at all. She keeps looking, running a hand along her new silk Crasian scarf, and suddenly it's my face that's colouring. I don't know what shocks me more, that she's eyeing me, or that I like it. Over here! Selin's voice is gruff as she grabs my arm and pulls me through the crowd to where smaller groups from distant villages are banding together. We find some unfamiliar faces gathering by one of the children. A tall woman with a pretty face and a long, lithe build. Her blonde hair is cropped save in back, where a braid at least 3 feet long hangs. She wears the bare minimum of clothing decency requires, and almost every inch of her exposed skin is covered in tattoos. The warding is beautiful. Elegant lines sliding under her clothes to make clear even her hidden flesh is inked. I wonder if she bothers with clothes at all when not in town. And again, I feel my face flush. None of the others seem perturbed at two strangers joining the tour group. Most are staring at our guide, with varying degrees of fear, awe, and desire. As Selen predicted, we're not the only ones with borrowed arms and armour. There are boys in ill-fitting shirts of metal links, leather jerkins studded with steel, and even two suits of warded steel plates. They carry an array of axes and spears, all etched with wards. The worn handles look older than the boys who carry them.
Hey, look at that one!
Selen tilts her head toward a tall boy with a steel helm tucked under one arm. His deep brown eyes match the thick curls of hair cascading over his brow. The steel plates of his armour are too large for his frame, but not by much. A scraggly brown beard clings to his heavy jaw, like the first blades of spring grass. He's beautiful, but my nerve breaks when he looks up. I quickly turn my head before our eyes can meet. I don't understand what's happening. It isn't as if I haven't taken a shine to people before, but tonight, it's all I seem able to think about. Most of the girls are unarmored, clad in sensible dresses and boots suited to hiking. They carry bows and small quivers. Two of them must have relatives who served in Mother's house guard. Their borrowed wooden breastplates are sleeker than those Selen took from her father's armory, with loose pants that flare at the legs before gathering into their boots. Standing still, they have the appearance of dresses, but with greater freedom of movement. I copied the design with a few flourishes for my riding gear. Cranked bows are slung from harnesses on their backs, with full quivers resting on their hips. It only takes a moment before Selen and I are noticed. We draw more than a few stares, and I worry again that we've been recognized. Three girls start whispering to one another, their eyes never leaving us. At last, they shove one of the group forward.
Are you Krasian? The girl asks as the other two giggle at her back.
I freeze. My mouth opens, but nothing comes out. With every passing moment, I feel more and more exposed. Selen steps in, smacking me on the back.
Sorry about that. Armin's a bit shy about his desert blood.
She bows as smoothly as one of her father's footmen.
I'm Simon. We're from Sweet Sucker, north of Cutter's Hollow.
Lana. The girl smiles and spreads her skirts as the others gather close. We're from Apple Hill. She's pretty, with an upturned nose and round cheeks, brown hair gathered into a braid that rests on her shoulder and hangs down to frame a budding bosom. There's a crankbow peeping from her weathered pack, but she doesn't have the look of a hunter. Quite the opposite. She looks at me the way Minda did, and I feel my heart speed up in response. As my mind catches up with her words, I breathe out some of my tension. Apple Hill is nearly a week's ride from the capital, and far from Sweet Sucker.
Lot of mud boys born after the war.
The beautiful boy, whose eyes I couldn't meet, steps in front of Lana.
Oscar, don't.
She puts a hand on his arm, but he yanks it free. I've heard tales of people with Krasian blood treated poorly in Theza, but no one has ever dared say a word like mudboy in my presence. I stare at him, incredulous, but then he steps in close, and by some instinct, I mirror him, standing just out of arm's reach. My fist clenches, and this time I meet his eyes with a cold glare. Oscar is larger than me, but I'm stronger than I look. I visualize wind against the rocks, the shuriken that would bring the heel of my palm to his heavy jaw. If he comes at me, I will lay him out on the cobbles. Selen steps between us, nose to nose with Oscar.
Dressing in your Dar's armor doesn't make you a fighter. You're smart. You'll step back while you can.
Aggression radiates off her like heat.
and he takes a step back in surprise. Then he glances at his friends and forces a laugh to cover his fear as he steps back in. Or what? Mudboy will Sharusak me.
Selen raises a fist, her voice deepened to a growl I hardly recognize.
Ought to be more worried about me.
A few of the other boys, obviously friends of Oscar, gather in close, but whether it's for a view of the brewing fight or a readiness to join in, I can't tell. These outer borough boys may be shepherds and farmers, but they have us outnumbered. Selen and I have practiced Sharusak forms all our lives, but neither of us has ever really fought anyone. Will our training be enough to stave off a beating? Even if it is, much of Sharusak is designed to cripple and kill. There won't be an overnight if we injure one of these boys before we even leave the square.
Hey, enough with the rooster strutting!
Our guide claps her hands, and everyone jumps, turning her way. She points a finger at Oscar, and he pales visibly.
I know Mudboy's worth 10 of you, apple picker. Leave the pretty one alone, or you can stay behind.
Oscar steps back so quickly he stumbles in his heavy armor, and it's only the quick hands of his friends that keep him from falling. He glares at me as they steady him, and I give him a hint of smile.
Name's Elakutta.
The warded child begins to pace in front of us, as I feel my knotted muscles begin to unclench.
Here to be your guide, not your wet nurse. Anyone doesn't hop when I say jump is going to regret it. Say A.
A, everyone stammers.
Ella stomps her foot, and the cobblestone cracks beneath her heel. Say A.
A, we cry loudly. Ella gives us a satisfied nod.
En ever seen a demon on Barator? But that don't mean we won't. That happens, you'll need to depend on one another. Gonna pick four leaders. Each will be responsible for four of your group mates. I ask where any of them are, and you'd best have an answer. Anyone in your group has a problem, you solve it, or bring it to me. And create to help you if your group can't keep pace. Say A.
A, everyone shouts in unison.
Good.
Ella points at Selen first.
You look ready for a fight. Simon, is it?
Selen nods, and Ella grunts, pointing to four others in the group.
You four are Simmons now.
Next, she points to Lana.
Taking charge will toughen you up. Can't have boys acting like you're a tackle ball to fight over.
Lana spreads her skirts and opens her mouth, but Ella is already turning away to point at Oscar.
Local bully, eh? Might be a little responsibility is what you need.
Oscar punches a fist to his chest like a soldier, and Ella snorts, turning to me.
And you, Mudboy, respect goes a long way with ignorant louts. See if you can earn some.
Again, that awful word. But it's different when Ella says it than Oscar. And she's trusting me to take charge of others. Mother won't even give me charge of myself. I reach for my skirts to curtsy, realizing too late I have none. By the time I manage a bow, Ella has turned on her heel and started striding for the edge of the cobblestone square.
Right then, time to go. You heard her,
Selen barks, waving her group along. The rest of us quickly follow. It's not yet dawn when we step off the last great ward and into the wilds of the borderland. There's no hint of danger. But still, a shiver rushes through me. For 15 summers, I've done everything I've been told, everything Mother ever wanted. Finally, I am doing something for myself. I want to impress Ella, and for once my training helps. Mother taught me to work a gathering, and I am quick to get to know the members of my group, Giles, Tam, Bonnie, and Alexis. Giles is shorter than me, with thick brown hair and a charming smile. His armour is worn, with faded wards burned into the leather. Tam is the largest boy on the tour, with thick arms and a barrel chest, but his shirt of metal links is heavy, and he gets out of breath easily. I keep an eye on him to make sure he doesn't slow us down.
Bonnie and Alexis are the two in the garb of the house guard. They look splendid, but step carefully, as if fearing to return the uniforms soiled. Alexis has her crankbow slung over her shoulder, but Bonnie has hers in hand.
"Don't keep your bow cranked all day," I tell her. "You'll ruin it."
"But what if I need to shoot something?" she asks.
"You're more likely to shoot one of us, carrying a loaded bow," I say. "Better to take a few seconds in the moment than try to shoot with a fouled bow."
"Thank you," Bonnie says, easing the tension and removing the bolt. She smiles. "If we're attacked, will you protect me while I crank it?" I nod, turning away before she can see the surprise on my face. It's amazing what a few changes to my appearance has done. We hike for hours, the well-trodden paths near Pump Forge fading into half-overgrown ways, then trails that seem invisible, even when you're right on them. Ella sets a hard pace through woods, over rocky rises and down grassy hills, until I've lost all sense of where we are. I've gone for walks in Gatherer's Wood, the public park that surrounds Gatherer's University, but I've never seen anything like this. It's like stepping into a landscape painting. I remember the bumpkins gaping at the ceiling of the Cathedral of Risen, and keep my jaw shut as I take in huge stands of ancient trees, distant mountains, and views that go on for miles without a building in sight. We break for lunch, but there is no cooking of any sort. Just biscuits, dried fruit, nuts, and tough smoked meat, washed down with cold water from canteens refilled at passing streams. My worry that Wanda might wake early and send out search parties fades the farther we go. Dozens of groups set out in different directions this morning, and only Ella seems to know where we are or where we're going. If anyone expected our guide to teach as she led us into the borderlands, they were mistaken. For the most part, Ella behaves as if we're not there at all, only occasionally barking for stragglers to keep pace, or warning us against loose stones or a boggy patch. We enter a thickly wooded area in the hills, somewhere north of the Lactonian wetlands. Still, Ella marches us on, even as the sun dips low in the sky and the floor beneath the forest canopy grows dark. I say nothing, but I stroke the wards on the armlet from the Crasian Bazaar, wondering if it could truly protect me if a demon leapt from the shadows beneath the trees. The sky is purple when we reach a clearing ringed with heavy stones. The clearing is rough and overgrown, but there is a fire pit in the centre, and room for everyone. The outward faces of the stones are chiselled with wards scraped clear of the moss and lichen that mottles the inner circle. "Welcome to your new home for the night," Ella says. "Ain't any privies, so if you've got to make more than water, suggest you do it before night falls. Simon, eh?" Selen steps forward. "Your group can stake spots first," Ella says. "Drop your gear and start collecting firewood." Selen scans the campsite, quickly settling on the hard-packed dirt near the fire pit. "This way. Packs off. You can put out bedrolls and rest when the fire's up." "Eh? How come they?" Oscar begins. "Lana!" Ella barks. "Your group next." She points a finger. "There's a stream about half a mile that way. Take buckets and bring them back full." "Eh?" Lana leads her group to the spot on the opposite side of the fire from Selen's, taking buckets hanging from their packs and heading into the woods. "A man?" Ella says, and it takes a second to realise she's talking to me. "Your group next, then get to work on the fire pit. I want it ready when they come back with kindling." "Eh?" I tell her. The ground behind Selen's group is overgrown and farther from the fire, but the grass is soft as we trample it flat, laying out our things before taking spades to the fire pit to clear the ash and shore up the sides. How to build and care for fire was an early lesson in Gatherer's University. There are wooden supports for cookpots and a spit, and we begin cleaning and setting them up.
"What about—"
Oscar cuts off as Ella turns to him.
"You boys been hiking all day in that ridiculous armour," Ella smiles. Figured you'd want to take a load off. You've got first patrol tonight.
She points to the remaining space in the campground.
Bit rocky over there, but you shouldn't notice, wrapped in all that steel.
Ella vanishes and returns not long after with a deer slung over one shoulder like an impudent toddler. Selen and I watch in morbid fascination as she guts and skins it. But our companions from Apple Hill are unfazed, helping prepare the meat for cooking. We're tired from the day's hike, but the mood in the camp is festive that evening. None of my worries have materialized, and the smell of cooking venison is heavenly. I feel a giddy excitement as the sun finally dips below the horizon, and I can tell I'm not alone. Selen has her spear ready, body tense like an arrow about to loose. Only Ella seems more interested in dinner as the rest of us watch the edge of the ward circle, half expecting demons to leap out at any moment. But they don't. There isn't so much as a cry in the distance. I think there is a soft glow to the wards on the stone, but it could just be the flickering firelight. Ella checks the wards on the weapons and shields of the boys in Oscar's group, spinning them in practiced hands to test weight and balance. She presses the meat of her thumb against Oscar's spear point until it draws blood. She thrusts the weapon back into Oscar's hands.
It'll do.
She sketches a rough map of the area in the dirt.
Take your group and start patrolling this route.
Oscar keeps an arched back and a straight face, but he pales a little in the firelight.
Shouldn't we get training or something?
Ella smiles.
Training you not to be scared of the dark. You see a demon, give a nice shriek, and I'll come running.
Oscar looks like he might say more, but he glances at the others in his group and swallows it. He takes a torch from his pack, affixing it to a socket on the end of his spear. He touches it to the fire, and it blazes to life.
You heard her, boys. Eyes sharp.
The others produce torches as well. Kenz and Tal hold axes in one hand and torches in the other. Oren holds a torch and a bow, though I don't see how he could use both. Rig, who has the thick arms of a blacksmith, straps his warded hammer to his back, ducking behind a rounded shield. He holds his torch cocked back like a club. All five of them look nervous as they step across the circle of wards and into the naked night.
I feel it too. For all my scoffing at the chance of seeing a demon when we were safe on the hollow great wards, I hold my breath as if expecting callings to leap out of the shadows to attack them. But again, nothing happens. And after a few moments, I start to relax.
The boys move out beyond the edges of the fire's glow, just bits of floating light in the darkness. I glance at Ella. She lounges on a rock, seemingly at ease, but the wards tattooed around her eyes glow softly as she tracks Oscar's group through the darkness. Like mother's spectacles, they grant her ward sight, the ability to see the glow of magic in all living things, illuminating the night with more clarity than brightest day, and letting her peer into the hearts of the unwary. She is letting the boys walk beyond the wards, but not unsupervised. If a calling was out there, she would see it glow long before it came anywhere near the camp. She catches me staring and turns those glowing eyes on me and Selen. Her eyes flick down for a moment, and I feel as exposed as if I were stripped bare. There is a hint of smile on her lips as she turns away, but I cannot fathom its meaning. Like mother, she has an air of knowing more than she lets on. A howl cuts through the darkness, and I freeze. It is followed soon after by others. A chorus on the night wind.
Demons, Lana asks.
Ella shakes her head.
Night wolves. Demons ain't the only thing to worry about this far from civilization. Lots of demon carcasses left out in the night during the war. Scavengers fed on them and changed. Thought those were just stories, Selen says. Demon meat is potent stuff, Ella says. Addictive. Makes you strong. Feral. Saw a hound grow big as a house after gnawing at the remains of a few battlefields.
Nightwolves took 6 of my man's sheep last winter. One of the girls in Lana's group, Kayla, agrees. Saw the prints in the snow myself. Paws bigger than my hand, with fingers spread.
More howls in the distance, turning to barks echoing a staccato rhythm through the hills. I fetch my spear from where I left it with my pack. Now you can load your bows, I tell Bonnie and Alexis.
Ain't cause for worry.
Ella's head is cocked, listening.
They're a long way off. Guessing they found dinner that's putting up a fight.
More howling, cut short by pained yelping. Ella hops down from her rock. She brushes herself off casually, but I see her loosening her knife in its sheath.
Gonna have a quick look. Be back soon.
Hey, you can't just leave, Selen calls as Ella crosses the wards.
Who's in charge?
You are, Ella calls back.
Keep patrolling, but stay close to the wards. I'll be back soon.
A moment later, she is swallowed by the darkness. The nervous tension returns to the camp, much as it had when Oscar's group started their patrol. Long moments pass without further sounds of night wolves, and slowly, we begin to relax. There is laughter by the fire, and Kayla produces a fiddle, playing a lively tune. Lana and some of the other girls begin dancing, skirts twirling as they spin and reel. I ache to join them, but I have no skirts to swish about. Lana sees me watching and reaches out a hand.
Dance with us, man.
Why not? Mother's herald Kendall taught me to dance, and it's simple enough to reverse the steps and take the lead. Stepping in time to the music, I catch one girl by the arm, spinning and using her own momentum to lift her momentarily from her feet before bringing her back down in time to meet her next partner. I turn a circuit and link arms with Lana. Didn't expect you to be so light on your feet. Lana's eyes meet mine, flickering with reflected firelight. The top button of her dress has come undone, but she makes no effort to fix it. I'm full of surprises, I say, picking her up to spin. She smells like flowers as I hold her close, then release her, laughing as she reels away to the next partner. We soon learn Kayla only knows one dancing tune. She plays it twice more before putting the fiddle away, more interested in talking to Giles. He's woven some tough wildflowers into a garland for her hair. There is no moon, but the stars are bright and plentiful, much more visible than in the capital, where there are lights in every house and street corner. I stand at the edge of the camp, admiring them. The air is crisp and clean, with none of the smells of town. And for the first time I can remember, I feel like I can take a full breath. Selen appears at my side, breathing deeply of the cool night air.
Still having second thoughts?
I shake my head.
You were right.
Selen gives a snort.
I'm always right.
I want to say more, but Lana comes over to join us. I point to a line of stars instead.
There's Kaji's spear.
And the lonely night wolf?
I don't see a wolf, Lana says, drawing close. She lays a hand on my arm, and it feels as if all my senses are focused on that one spot.
I never thought it looked much like a wolf either, I admit.
Mistress Viker says you have to use your imagination.
That your village gatherer?
Another girl, Andrea, asks. Her hair is orange, and brown freckles cover her face, running all the way down into the neckline of her dress. Selen coughs, and I remind myself not to mention the university.
Hey, she has a star chart and likes to teach the children to read the sky.
What else do you see? A third girl, Melanie, asks. I look back to the sky, but before I can answer, Oscar appears out of the darkness, pointing upward.
That one is demon's bung.
Andrea and Melanie laugh, but Lana is less impressed. If you could keep your bung shut, you might learn a thing or two.
What's to learn?
He asks.
Just use your imagination, eh?
He points to another section of sky, where a passing cloud obscures the stars.
That's cow's udder, and over there is deliverer's turd.
More laughter, and even Selen chuckles, running her eyes over him again.
Shouldn't you be patrolling? Lana asks.
Think we've done our share, while you lot danced and looked at stars, Oscar says.
Why not take your turn?
I expect Lana to balk and open my mouth to volunteer, but she surprises me.
Eh, think you're right. Melanie, Andrea, Kayla, fetch your bows.
She turns to me as the other girls move to comply. Scary out there. Walk with me? My mind races, not sure how to reply. She doesn't look frightened, and something about that scares me. She has more on her mind than demons.
He'd love to, Selen finishes for me.
I stammer something incomprehensible, but Lana takes Selen's word as an answer and smiles, running off to fetch her bow.
What are you doing? I ask.
Making sure you have a little fun, Selen says.
What's the harm? Now that Oscar's back, I think I might take him for a walk as well.
He thinks you're a boy, I remind her.
Might be that doesn't matter to him.
If it does, Selen shrugs.
Maybe I let slip that Simon is really Simina, whose da wouldn't let her go on the Burator, so she stole his armour and went anyway.
I feel my stomach knotting and don't understand how she can be so calm.
What do I tell Lana?
Who says you need to tell her anything?
Selen asks. Any fool can see she likes you. And like you're getting promised.
Just a bit of fun on the Burator. Go for a walk. See what happens.
I glance around the camp. We're not the only ones. Giles is kissing Kayla, for luck, before she goes into the night. Rig is putting his big arms to work, helping a perfectly capable Bonnie crank her bow. Others are talking, laughing, flirting.
Why not me?
Lana returns, and I take a torch, setting it into a socket on my spear. She carries a loaded crankbow, carefully aimed down with the safety engaged.
Shall we?
I'm afraid and excited as we step together into the naked night. But, like Lana, it isn't demons on my mind. We begin the patrol as a group, but after several circuits of the camp, Lana breaks the girls into teams of two and spreads them out, ostensibly to keep watch from all sides. We can still see the campfire, but the figures around it are just silhouettes, too distant to make out.
We're alone,
Lana says, and something in her voice sends goosebumps running up my arms. I've tried to keep careful watch, scanning the darkness at the end of the torchlight and listening for any sign of disturbance. But my eyes keep flicking back to Lana. The way her hair bounces around her smooth shoulders, her round cheeks and large eyes, her soft lips, the button that's still undone. I'd never given much thought to kissing girls, but I'm thinking about it now. In the same way a change of clothes made girls look at me differently, I'm seeing them in a new way too. I can feel the kiss coming, like pressure in the air before a storm. My heart is drumming in my chest, a steady thump, thump, thump. My face feels flushed and hot. I look again and find Lana looking back with those wide brown eyes. Our gazes meet, and she moistens her lips with her tongue. I feel my mouth water. Grandmum says the boy should make the first move, but I don't think Selen has ever waited for that. And what of me? I may be dressed as a boy, but I'm not one. I want to reach out, to get on with it because the tension is too much to bear. But what if I'm reading things wrong? What if I'm too rough, or not rough enough? Do I open my mouth, or keep it closed? She takes a step toward me, and I step back in surprise. Lana giggles and steps forward again, backing me into a tree. "Didn't think you'd be shy," she whispers as she sets her crankbow down. "Bet you've kissed plenty of girls back in Sweet Sucker." I squirm against the trunk of the tree, resisting a sudden urge to run. "Not really," I manage. "My mother is very strict." The answer seems to please Lana. Her smile widens. "Your mum ain't here, is she?" Mention of mother does nothing to calm my racing heart. But then Lana leans in, lips parted slightly, and my resistance breaks. I drop the spear to the ground, torch guttering against the damp soil, and put a hand on her waist, drawing her close, like in the paintings of lovers I've seen. My other hand comes up, gently to caress her cheek, as I lean in and our lips touch. The kiss is warm and soft and just a little moist, our lips forming a seal that breaks with a soft pop when we finally pull apart. I start to say something, but Lana isn't interested, leaning in to kiss me back. It's harder than mine, and she presses against me, opening her mouth just a little. I taste her breath, and something awakens in me, something primal, unlike anything I've ever felt before. I feel a growl building in the back of my throat, and my whole body thrums with it. It gets louder, vibrating in the air around us. I draw back and open my eyes, seeing Lana leaning in, eyes still closed, lips puckered, waiting for more. I gulp a breath, but the growling continues, seeming to come from above us. I look up and see branches swaying, but there's no breeze. Then I see it. Eyes black, armor the color of bark. The demon lets go its grip on the trunk and drops down, talons leading.